And we are recording. What up, what up? Welcome to Mind Your Hive's Beekeeping. I am your host, Greg Lehman. I'm here with my beautiful wife, Kara Jo.
Hello, hello.
We are actually in like our favorite place in the world right now. We're in Pittsburgh,
New Hampshire.
Yeah, Pittsburgh, New Hampshire. Pittsburgh without the H. Don't get it confused with Philly's cross state rival, Pittsburgh.
Which is a like, beautiful city that we really like.
Yeah, we do like Pittsburgh. But this is it's like the nipple top of New Hampshire. The other, like, we're probably looking at Canada.
Yeah, on the Canadian border. We got married here. We come up here every year. If you listened, we had another, I think Drunk on a Lake was the name of
it. It might have been like Day Drinking on a Lake. Oh, okay. I don't know if I would have called that Drunk on a Lake.
Okay. I think by the end I was drunk on a lake.
Speaking of which, I just cracked a... Dude, this is so good.
Cheers.
Did you try one of these yet?
I just had my first sip before we started.
Yeah, so this is The Seed, a living beer project. The Seed is in Atlantic City, New Jersey. And they make just super rad, beautiful beer. A lot of saisons and like these beautiful lagers. So this is their house lager. It's called As Simple as Home. But I got a chance to hang out with those folks. And man, they're awesome. Farsa, Maine, Tonewood in New Jersey. And
oh, The Seed was a part of that collab?
Yeah, we went to Seed. We were brewing that beer at Seed. So it's like a three-way collab. We're all doing something a little bit different with a similar base recipe. And that was the first time I like really got to hang out at The Seed and drink a bunch of their beer. And man, their beer is awesome.
Cool.
And yeah, Sean and Amanda, they're really cool. So I was happy to bring this to New Hampshire. Like, yeah, this is fun. I when I put this in the cooler, I was like, this is a cool one to drink up here. So hey, cheers.
Cheers again.
If you can hear, there's a rumbling in the background. We just had a wicked storm roll through here, so we're hanging out inside.
Oh,
there's
you're
a
using
generator.
Like,
wicked hot. There's a wicked hardcore storm that rolled through here. Do I sound like Bobby Kennedy?
Yes, exactly. Like him.
But yeah, wicked storm rolled through. Hail.
I'm big
curious
hail.
If there's like dents in the top of our car.
I was like, I don't think it's going to rain. I looked at the radar and then it was like,
so we lost power, but the generator's booming.
Which is why we're doing this podcast, because it's not nice out.
Yeah. Man, we just like... We just battled in life, so it's nice to be up here, but we just had our Kima girl, our Australian cattle dog, just went through some shit.
Yeah.
She's doing great. She's doing, like, really, really great, but anybody that followed along, we'll just tell you what happened, and yeah, I don't know, maybe it's, like, a little bit of a lesson for people,
right?
Oh,
it's totally a lesson. I think people need to know about this. So she was chewing on a tennis ball like she's done a million times before. It was one that she found in a park that we brought home because she used to find balls and we never thought anything of it.
We would like go to parks and be like, oh shit, we forgot a toy for Kima. Oh wait,
she'll
it doesn't
find
matter.
One.
She'll find one. And yeah, like 1 minute later, she'd be like, hey, look, I found a Frisbee.
Yeah. So, you know, we were playing with her. We were sitting on the porch. It's getting late. And then we just like let her chew on the ball for like an hour. She was like having a great time. And then I'm inside and Greg's like, there's something wrong with Kima. She was chewing on this ball. We looked at it. She didn't eat any of the ball. She's just acting weird.
She ripped all the felt off it, which, again, not a big
but like
thing. She does that sometimes.
And we put it back together, and there was nothing like she ate.
Yeah. At first, I'm like, there's something stuck in her throat because she's drooling really heavily, and her mouth's, like, foamy. And she's also just acting nuts.
She's, like,
really
hiding.
Anxious.
Yeah.
Really scared. Like,
so
you just felt so bad for her. She's such
point,
a sweet dog.
So sweet. At that point, it's late. We're like, okay, I guess we'll just go to bed and we'll see in the morning. Then you woke up at like 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I couldn't find her. She was hiding upstairs under a bed, just with like the most worried look on her face, with just a puddle.
So much drool. And kettle dogs aren't drooly dogs.
No.
So I tried to give her favorite treat. She wouldn't have it. We end up going to the vet. They do x-rays. She looks fine. They give her like belly injections, because she's like has inflamed intestines, which apparently any stress that you that your dog experiences, they will have digestion upset.
I mean, humans too.
I guess
you get
humans.
Stressed out and you know, get the shits.
That wasn't it. They were like, if she doesn't get better in like a couple hours, you need to take her to the emergency room. She got worse. Her face started swelling and she was like
panting and like it looked seemed like she was having a hard time breathing.
She was just like, guys, I'm not okay. And I was like, this is as a dog owner, like you're their advocate. Like we need to take her. Drove 40 minutes to this amazing emergency.
I'll give a shout out to not only like our home vet, Dublin veterinarian.
That's it. In Dublin, PA. Very exciting place. They're
super nice people. We recently moved into this new property, so we don't know them or anything, but we had to take our dogs once.
We've been taking our dogs a lot to the vet lately.
Whatever. So our other dog got teeth taken out. Whatever. No big deal.
His breath smells a lot better now.
But they were like, we don't have the ability to do what she needs, like to figure out what's going on. And they're worried for her too, obviously. And they were like, skip every other vet and go to Metropolitan in Norristown, Pennsylvania.
Metropolitan, like, Veterinary Associates.
They're the best. Just do it.
So I go, I take her, Greg's working. They, like, long story short, they put her through all these tests. And when they sedate her to look down her throat, they see that her tongue is sloughing off.
Like the top layers of her tongue and mouth are just peeling away.
And it's all gray and like dying.
Yeah.
And they're like, we think like she has like a chemical burn. We look it up. There are associations with tennis balls and
certain manufacturers. It seems like, I don't know how long ago, just call it 10, 20 years ago, maybe, but they were using some type of toxic glue that was messing with dogs if they got underneath the felt.
Also,
but the manufacturers that I read about it happening weren't the same ones. I mean, I saw it was like a Wilson ball, but like it was old. I don't know. Sometimes you can just look at a tennis ball and be like, they've changed the logo since then, you know?
So also, like, we don't know where that ball came from. Was it in someone's garage? Did it roll in something? And then she just like sucked on it for an hour. She ends up getting a feeding tube, getting IVs. She's on opioids.
They essentially sedated her and then had a feed tube in for five
days. It was so sad. Greg ended up getting COVID from all the stress.
Yeah. So then I had COVID during this thing. Not cool. That was like 4 days of like me messed up.
Yeah.
My symptoms, headache, body aches was the first thing that came through where I was like, dude, my body hasn't hurt like this since I did a 100-mile backpacking
trip. And you
trip.
Had a really bad
what
headache.
What is going on? Yeah. And then a headache hit me. And then I think maybe I felt a fever, but I got a test. And like literally within 5 seconds of adding the drops to the test, it was like, boom, positive. So it was like, it was a high concentration. And then four or five days later was the
everybody
last.
Kima came out of the hospital. Greg came out of his COVID.
Yeah, I lost my taste and smell for literally exactly 12 hours. It came right back the next day, but it was kind of nuts. I was like, I took a little baby shot of whiskey and I was like, whoa, I can tell it's alcohol, but I can't taste anything. Like a little shot of hot sauce. And I was like, I can taste that it's hot, but I can't taste it at all. Like coffee, I could like mouth feel the bitter, like your mouth like puckers up in a certain way with bitter foods that I know of with beer too. And it was like, holy shit, like I think the thinness of this and the puck, I think this is coffee. It was like, I had fun with it.
Yeah, I was outside and I come in and Greg's like furiously like going through the refrigerator like, I lost my taste of smell. I can't. And he goes through this whole thing and he's like, and then he's like eating random things. He's like, I definitely lost it. I can't taste this. I'm like, all right, dude.
And then, you know, I tested negative and that was nice to just know it was through my system. But it like, I don't know, I think I still might have some dumb brain. I'm going to use that as an excuse for a while, like COVID brain.
What was your excuse before?
That I must have had COVID and not realized it.
Okay.
Someone I was a little kid. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think the message about Kima is watch random balls.
Yeah, just don't assume everything is fine.
Yeah.
Like, you know, maybe we shouldn't have let her pick up a random ball at Knockamix
and
Park.
Which we never even thought about. But now, guess what? Guess what? None of my dogs are ever even chewing on tennis balls ever again just because...
I don't need the PTSD of
that. Yeah.
But she's doing really great. And the folks that have saw that she was going through some shit and reached out. And you all were really nice. It was really nice. Kima's so loved.
Yeah,
she deserves it.
Yes.
So we stopped in Maine on the way up here.
Yes.
No transition there, but... Going back to like this trip, so we have an electric car. We basically can go like, I don't know, 200 miles. It has a 300 mile at the most we've ever gotten was 300 miles, but you got to plan it out between chargers and
like 250.
We can like get like 200 miles of charge, get almost in like sitting for like an hour of charge. So basically, we drive for like 3 hours, stop, charge for an hour, 3 hours, stop, charge for an hour. And we decided to just take a pit stop in Maine, and because Maine rocks, coastal Maine's so rad. And dude, we camped. What is it called?
Spellbound Farm.
Yeah, so you booked it through...
I booked it through Airbnb. I didn't even know it was like where we were staying.
Can you book through the Tenter?
I don't know. I found it like Tenter, Canvas Camp, like tent sites, like platforms.
Right, okay.
But I booked it through Airbnb.
Yeah, so there's Hip Camp, which we've done before. And shout out to our buddy Todd Hardy, the original founder and master beekeeper of Bar Hill Gin, who we stayed on his farm last year through Hip Camp, randomly met him, and it was amazing. Go back and listen to Day Drinking on a Lake.
Hammered on a Lake.
Which I'm going to make my way to. But yeah, so this year we stayed on this Spellbound Farm, and is this woman and her two kids, and she started this farm. We like walked into and back through the farm. It used to be a hop farm, and they have these like beautiful, amazing trellises that I'm just like, oh, I hope this can grow hops again. But she's growing all these herbs and making a lot of similar stuff, I think, that like Carajo Skincare is about.
She does more like Lyme disease, like tinctures and tick spray, which...
But she seemed awesome. Christina?
Yeah, she was awesome.
She seemed really cool. Yeah, I really liked her. Dude, tell about the swimming hole.
Oh,
this shit does not exist anymore. Across like the street. In the world. I don't think the locals to this town know how rad this thing is.
They didn't seem to know.
But they were loving
it. This is so cool. And they're like, yeah, we know. It was like a river that had an old mill. And there's like a little pool in front of the mill, like right before it goes down.
And like would power the mill. Yeah.
And everybody's swimming there. And we went and swam there. And kids are jumping off the bridge.
You can jump off this bridge and go land in this pool. And it's deep and it's like clean. But it's city domain. Like it's
public domain.
Public domain. They have signs like no alcohol, don't throw rocks, don't break any of these windows, because then we're just going to close this thing up. But enjoy yourself.
Yeah, everybody was like there, and there's this little girl, and her legs were all scratched up, and she rides her bike over, and she comes over, and she dunks her head in. She flips it up, and she says it to this other girl. She's like, my dad said I can't come swimming, but I can dunk my head in.
I wish I could imitate her Maine accent, and also like little kid speech, whatever. What do you call it? Speech impediment? Like little kid speech impediment that like fowa, like however she talked, but with this like Maine fisherman accent that I cannot do at all.
Well, it's like
so funny.
It's nice because it was like wild. Like these kids were just out riding their bikes, scratched up legs, jumping off a bridge in a pool. Like they were just.
It was great.
Yeah, it was really awesome. So this woman had mainly tinctures, but she had some skincare, and I was like, oh, I want to try her skincare. So I hit her up and we ended up bartering. We brought some honey, and so she gave me some of her skincare.
Holler, that's how the world should work.
Yeah, and she had these beautiful gardens, and so I started talking to her, and, you know, we were obviously talking about beekeeping because I was giving her honey, and she was saying that she had tried a couple years to be a beekeeper in Maine, which has got to be a job in and of itself.
I think, like, I looked up that there's as many beekeepers in all of Maine as there are in just the two or three counties around where we live in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Yeah, we're like highly populated beekeeping. But
a little too populated, which maybe we'll talk about. Uh-oh, big rain again. Coming. If you hear rain, just enjoy the background.
Yeah, the white noise.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it gets... We were talking to people in Pittsburgh, New Hampshire, which is like four hours?
Yeah, but it's like northwest.
But still, it was getting like... It gets to like 30
below. Happens every winter,
so
for
like
sure.
In Maine, where she lived in Rockport, how cold does it get? But she was saying that she didn't have success with bees. She was getting them from like Georgia.
So she would like so many people. She was ordering packages from down south, which everybody does.
And so she was like, I know, I was getting packages. And I think she read my face right away. And she goes, I know. She was like,
your judgmental face? No, I'm just kidding.
Maybe it was judgmental. It wasn't, she didn't come across, you know, like you're judgy.
I bet she's come across people that kind of get judgy about it. But it, you know, it's true. But like, I wonder if she's encountered people that are like, yeah, you couldn't keep bees. This is what you... I get it.
It wasn't... we were having a friendly, totally. Beautiful conversation. So she was like, I know. I kind of said, like, I know. But she was like, yeah, I know. It's So many mites are coming on these bees. And she was like, and they're not acclimated to the environment. She was like, and I just couldn't keep them. And then I said, we are so fortunate because we have a huge community around us that has like overwintered bees and genetics from our area, which is huge to survival. But she said,
even more important, I think, in Maine.
Yeah,
you know what absolutely. I mean. Like Pennsylvania, it has to be a little easier to keep southern bees, but taking bees from 20 hours down south up to here, like, talk about just climate difference.
And holy even their crap. Chicken coop was built off their house because I think they needed like the warmth. I thought that was interesting. But she said that she decided the bees need a long-term solution. And so she just started planting so many flowers and herbs. I don't know if that's how she got started in the gardening game.
I think she just maybe stepped up that game and stepped up probably like wildflower game. Cause there's so many really beautiful wildflowers that were clearly like she was helped using. Cultivate and she uses, but they were not grown in beds.
Right.
Which I love. That's the move, you know?
So I just was like, I was like, oh my God, I love this woman even more. Like she's exactly, she knows her shit. She knows what's going on. She gets it. Some people don't get it.
But the thing is like, that's the save the bees mentality to us is, well, we've talked about so many times, save the bees does not mean save the honeybees. Means all these native bees and all these other, you know, native pollinators.
And but, it really means planting plants.
Plant native plants. Plant the plants that you're missing in, you know, seasonal blooms. Find what's missing and plant stuff that blooms at the time. Well, I get on a pedestal about that.
No, I think that's a good reminder every time.
So, oh man, I had somebody email for help and I love that. Thank just shout out anybody that's willing to email somebody they've never met and ask for help. Like, I think that's such a powerful thing. Unfortunately, the conversation didn't go the way the guy wanted. So I get this email and he's like, hey, can you use some help? I just bought bees yesterday. Or no. He goes, I'm gonna get a nuke.
Which July 21st today.
Yeah, it's July 21st. So this is like, July 17th. He's like, I'm getting my first bees. I'm getting a nuke, from. And he tells me who he's getting it from. And he goes, I've never kept bees before. Just want to see if there's something that you can help. Help you can give me. Blah blah blah. So I respond a couple days later, and I'm like, hey, you know what? There's a class I recommend. Here's a class. Like, it starts in February next year. It's going to take you through the whole beekeeping season. Like, it's way too late to start keeping bees right now. Like, you can't start right now, but you'll start next year. And, like, here's a club to join. Here's whatever. I give him a little bit of information. He replies back and goes, no, I bought them yesterday. I got my bees from this beekeeper. I got a nuke from him, and I'm starting right now. And then he says like something like, you know, I know it's not a good time to start keeping bees, but it's about the journey for me.
Which really put a crinkle in your panties.
That shit. That was like, it's about me. Like, him, no, dude.
For him.
Yeah. It's about your journey. I'm like, nah, dog. I'm like, all right. So I got to be all nice about it. I'm like, hey, I'm not trying to be rude, but it's really discouraging to hear somebody say it's about them. It's not about you and beekeeping. It's about the bees. It's about nature. It's about, you know, bettering the environment around you and trying to start a nuke as a beginner with no frames and no experience in the middle of a dearth in July is going to lead to an unhealthy, weak colony. And it's bad for bees. It's bad for the environment. It's bad for pollinators.
Also, your bees are probably just going to die. It's
they're just going to die. And I was trying to be encouraging, like, all right,
you're not going to learn anything either.
Like, don't get discouraged because this is a really tough way to start out. And also, that beekeeper should never sold you the bees.
No, it's greedy.
If they knew you were a beginner, and from the conversation I heard or saw in an email, they knew and they still sold you bees. And I'm not going to judge somebody that maybe needs money and maybe somebody's going through some stuff. But, like, also, I have a really hard time doing the wrong thing. And that beekeeper knew they were doing the wrong thing and they were just taking the money from it. And that really pissed me off too. Like, you know, that's just money, you know, pisses me off. And then the dude's like, there's no ordinance in my township for beekeeping. So, there's not, it doesn't say anything in town ordinances. So I brought it up to like a town committee member and they're going to put it on the agenda. Can you come speak in 4 days?
Also, like, if there's no ordinance, do leave it alone. Why are you getting government involved?
I'm like, dude, I'm like, again, I'm like, I'm sorry to be the bearer of telling you you're making bad decisions. But if there's no ordinance in your township, that means you can keep bees and it don't bring the government. Don't get the government involved.
Because we've seen local governments like just totally have a problem with
we've had it. We've interjected when they went over across the line. Dumb Kate Harper trying to make it illegal to keep bees in certain township in Pennsylvania because she wrote into the law you have to pass a state-approved beekeeping test. There's no such thing as state-approved beekeeping test or course. She put it in a law when it doesn't exist, which would have made beekeeping illegal in a township. Luckily, she got voted out. But people like that that are going to mess things up for everybody else.
Well, and that's why, I mean, even this guy that's like, there's no ordinance. Like, you don't want to get people involved in beekeeping that don't know about beekeeping because there's so much misunderstanding misinformation.
Level, yeah, surface, sorry to interrupt. Surface level understanding.
I'm used to it.
Seems, oh man. Surface level understanding seems like, man, I've read a couple books. I get this. But there's just experience level understanding that you get that you need to have before you're ever trying. Oh, come on. But also, anybody out there, don't bring it up. If you don't have an ordinance, don't bring anything up.
Yeah.
Let it be.
I think he's going to let it be, but I think it's already on the.
I know. It's like, I think this chair just keeps making weird noises.
It's like, what's clanking?
There's all kinds of noise. We got rain, hail. We got generator. Whatever. We're going to. It's me drinking. So that was just a frustrating experience. That was frustrating for me.
Yeah. But we did have a really positive experience recently.
You're going to talk about Jeff?
Yeah. We had the PA state and beekeeping inspector come out to our house, what, like a week ago?
July 11th.
2 weeks ago.
So, yeah.
And we had it once before. And first of all, we know the PA inspector and he's just awesome. So we just like enjoy him anyway. But he is so knowledgeable. We learned so much.
I'll go through just because, all right. So in Pennsylvania, and I think I'm under the assumption this is a lot of states out there. But the one thing that the state does require for beekeepers is that you register your hives.
It's like $10.
You say register your apiary. And I literally think it's $10 for 2 years.
Right now it is, yeah.
And what that really is allowing I guess it's Department of Ag he works for.
Yeah.
Is say there's a fowl brood, American fowl brood outbreak. It allows them to get a better sense of what's going on. Ooh, baby, rain is a-falling. Lets them get a better sense, lets them quarantine. Yes, it gets them some money, but they're doing really good things. In order to legally sell bees, so queens or packages or nukes, whatever, in Pennsylvania, you need to have your apiaries inspected. So they want to make sure you're not spreading bad diseased bees. And so this is how it went down. I think this was a few years ago when we first reached out. I think I just texted Jeff and was like, yo, dog, we want to start selling bees. Can you come inspect? And we set up a date. But I think you can. There's a form online that you can fill out.
There's also
and there's an
their
email.
Phone numbers.
Yeah,
like
literally.
You can. I think like if you go on, it's like call this person and they're. Yeah, I think it's probably their like, ag phone number. It's
yeah,
not like
it is once yeah. a week. I think he's like in the office doing paperwork and like responding because every week I would talk to him on the same day. But anyway, so then he hits me up. We set up a time and he's like, I can do the inspections without you. But if you want to be there, that's always great, too. I'm like, dude, we're there.
Our mentors taught us to not fear the inspector, that you want to try to, if they ever come, you want to go out in the yard and be with them and learn from them. And
hell yeah.
Like, this isn't a gotcha. It's not trying to get anybody in trouble. It's like a community thing.
Yeah.
Very much so. So we were like,
they're like social workers. You know, like they're like there to help you.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have any experience with social workers, so I don't know. Did that not make any sense? But like they're there for you, I think, more than they're there for the state.
Like, yeah. I mean, it's
a thankless job.
It's kind of like it reminds me of like those people that do like public health. It's kind of like public health for bees.
I guess that's what I call a social worker.
I think I don't think you're wrong.
Yeah. But anyway,
I mean, I don't know.
We're really fortunate. The current inspector, and a lot of times changes every few years, but the current dude, Jeff Ackle, he's dynamite. We really appreciate him. So anyway, so he comes out to our hives. He's like, hey, let's set up a date. Took a few weeks for us to figure it out. He comes out. You know, we now have about 30 hives. I mean, I think we had like 27 or something when he came out. A couple that were queenless. But he goes, all right, here's the deal. I'm just going to check. I'm going to inspect every hive. I'm going to go in. I'm looking for a frame of eggs, and I'm looking with larvae, and I'm looking for a frame of capped brood, and I want to check it out, and then, you know, I'll move on to the next hive. He goes, but do you want to be a part of this study? He goes, there's 14 beekeepers in Pennsylvania, in every state, that are a part of it, and what we'll do is we'll take a sample from 8 different hives, and we send live bees from those 8 hives collectively, so like a quarter cup from each hive. We send live bees to the testing facility in Belts, in I think it's NIH in Maryland, and we'll send a sample of dead bees, so it's a quarter cup of dead bees from each one, and then they knocked
an alcohol wash.
Yeah, and then they knocked the frames to like see if they
to collect
the frames
the larva
of larvae they attack.
And eggs.
But it's to test for the tropolelapse mite if they're finding that anywhere. But they send back, and to get this done, I literally think it'd be like $1,000 to get all the testing done.
He
but
said
they test,
thousands of dollars.
Yeah, they
if
test
we had
for,
to pay for it.
I think it was, I wish I had it in front of me, but it was like 20 different diseases and bacterias that they're looking for, and then a bunch of other stuff. But it's cool. We're going to, and like, I'm sure it'll be 6 months from now, but
it's
we'll get like
government.
A report back from our apiary of like these Nosema levels, these disease levels, deformed wing virus, like how much of this stuff is present. Super cool. Super great information
just,
to know.
And like every time he we take off the supers and then he
pulls, we had a machine. We had this thing cooking.
Yeah, and we also can like help, so he's not just doing it by himself. And like he pulls brood frames, and really when he came last year, and we might have talked about this in another episode earlier, but like he was the one that had me really start looking for disease in hives.
Yeah.
Like, and he, you know, you can tell the difference. Like if there's big, juicy, fat, 5-6 day old larvae, and they're starting to cap, or like they're starting to cap cells around that larva, near that larva, and it's coming from the outside and it's working symmetrically inside. And so the perforation on the cell is in the center.
Yeah, symmetrical.
That means
in
they're
the
capping.
Yeah.
But if there's not these big, juicy larvae and it's unsymmetrical circles, that could be uncapping for other reasons, which that is like alone.
I mean, I think we had a podcast last year.
That's what I'm saying.
Afterwards. Yeah. I'm sorry you said that.
I know.
I'm trying
you're
to figure
trying
out what this dumb noise is.
I know. It's
that
like the cowbell.
Having.
More cowbell.
Yeah.
Less cowbell.
Great Will Ferrell Saturday Night Live.
And also like, you know, sack brood and European fowl brood and... K-wing.
K-wing. We just learned about K-wing. I'd heard the term, but he was like, look at this, a couple bees right here. He's like, that could be K-wing. And then we dove into like what K-wing is. And I don't want to speak on it because somebody will be like, you're slightly wrong
well,
in the littlest way.
Well, it's because they have four
an
wings and they like hook, the wings hook onto each other and then they can unhook. And when they unhook, that it can be a sign of more than one thing, but
yeah,
you should look
when they're unhooked in the hive, when they typically would not be unhooked, there's an issue, and it's some, I think it was mite driven,
and there's also like some genetics, like
yeah.
But you know what I really loved about Jeff is like we're talking the whole time. He was there for how long? Was he there?
I mean, like 2 hours
yeah
at least.
He was there a long time. And so we're just like talking about bees the whole time, and he's like, I don't know, it's all theory. He's
right,
like,
he's like, it's
just
not so black and white.
He was like, we're just, this is my guess, this is my best guess. And the dude's in so many beehives, I'm like, your best guess is probably. But you know, he's always like, I don't know, I could be totally wrong.
He's like, this is from the papers I've read, and this is the research I've done and seen. This is what I think it is. But, you know, some people think it's something else. But you know what I liked? I liked, like, trying to treat him in a way where I'm like, we'll take these off, you pull those frames, we'll put them all back together. Like, that was the system we had for him. Where it's like, dude, you go out to, I don't know, 4 or 5 apiaries a day, and you're just pulling boxes, and like...
It was hot.
I'm like, I'm trying to like give him a break.
So he can't wear just like gloves, regular beekeeping gloves, because disease. So he wears those nylon blue gloves.
Nitrile.
Yeah.
Blue nitrile gloves.
And
yeah, like,
we've
you know,
worn them before, but
latex.
We don't mess with them anymore. But He lifts his hand up, and there's just all this sweat just like pouring. I'm like,
Anybody that's ever worn those gloves, they're so hot when you're, and your sweat from your arms drips and in them, and then it drips out. It's
and
so
then,
gross.
Like, there's like so much water under the glove, pruny and you like hands. Think that there's like a bee in your glove, and you're like, oh, it's just all my sweat pouring.
But it was really nice too. Jeff's again, he was like glowing review. He was stoked with how our apiary looked. But here's the thing too. I'm like, we've gotten so detail oriented with notes, and not like overly note taking. It's just making the note every time you see that hive.
Yeah.
And being, you know, not meticulous about it, but like we've developed a good system where I put like a quick shorthand in a shared notes folder that we have, you know, between our iPhones, and I make a marking, and then I move that to the B+ database that I have just on my phone. It's not cloud based, so it's on my phone with like a little more detail, and that keeps like, you know, the full running transcript of what's going on versus our notes is just, you know, next thing we need to do / what we saw when we just went in. And it was nice because he's like, all right, he's opening, as we're opening up a hive, I go, all right, Kara's like popping the box and doing her thing, and I'm looking in the notes and going, okay, we tested this 2.5 weeks ago, we tested this for mites, it came back one mite out of a 300 sample, didn't see anything, like, go ahead, do your thing. And we've tested about 80% of our hives. A few of them we start testing in June. A few of them were queenless and we were waiting for them to get mated, and they just got mated. One we just introduced a new queen to. Shout out Michael Palmer.
Dude, Michael Palmer's bees have been awesome for us.
I'm going to pull up what it is, but I totally forgot to even... little notes of what I want to talk about. I didn't talk about the Michael Palmer queen we're getting. Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was so great. I'm pulling it up and like testing, but we've tested about 80% of our hives, and none of them are over the threshold of 1% mite infestation. So,
well, one of mine were.
At the spot we volunteer at, and we treated that one. You want to talk about that real quick?
Yeah, I just put formic acid on them, and I did the 14-day treatment because it... Well, one, there has to be a certain... it's got to be...
All right, so formic acid used to be called MAC.
Max, oh, I don't know about this.
Whatever, MAQS. But formic acid, it is... there's a packet that has...
Two strips.
It's an organic treatment. Yeah, it's an organic treatment, but it's potent. Like, you smell
like
it.
Like thymol.
Yeah, thymol, which is the active component in thyme, like the herb. And there's other stuff in it. But anyway, it's organic, and you can...
Well, Formic Pro is the... It's formic acid. But it's Formic Pro.
Formic Pro. You can use this with supers on. So with honey supers, you can have it on. And the most kind of important thing to know is that the temperature can't go above 80, what? Was it 85?
Yes, 85. It's like between 50 and 85.
Formic Pro is a phenomenal website with a tutorial of what to do. Good. It's so good.
It's like this easy video, and it talks about... So you put these... You can do a 20-day treatment or a 14-day treatment. I think the 14-day treatment kills mites underneath the cap root.
Well, that's actually just, I think, test. We've heard so many speakers do research on this that they've said the 10-day treatment. So some people do one strip for 10 days, then put a second strip in for 10 days. It's a 20-day total treatment split up between the two strips. Two strips for 14 days is the other method. And the research has come out where the two strips for 14 is a concentrated enough dose of thymol that it will penetrate the cappings and kill mites under the cap.
I mean, if you go on the website, it says both treatments do that, but I don't know.
Yes, but the research, and again, state inspector was like, dude, 14 days is the only one that works, unless
also,
you don't
have
cap sprayer. Yeah. However, you don't want to do it too late in the season because there is, I think the concentration... I think it does mess with some pheromones, and it can make an older queen, it can make them supersede the older queen.
Which we did last year after Ida, and then we were like, are there even drones to mate with these queens? You don't want to do it late in the season.
We had like four hives get mated in October, which was scary.
Yeah.
Oh, it was scary. And then you don't know if they got that much, you know, juice pumped.
Yeah. But also, it's only the first three.
Juice pumped in? You want, no reaction?
I don't know. It's true. I was ready for it. I don't know. What was I going to say? Oh, wait. Oh, the first 3 days have to be underneath 85 degrees.
Yeah, 85, 84. Look it up.
So then you just let it sit. And then, so the a big thing about mite treatment is you want to test for mites after the treatment, not just before to see if it's was effective.
It's almost more important to check. Some people are going to always test or going to always treat, but you got to test after, because if your treatment didn't work, you know there's an issue.
Or you need to keep an eye on it or whatever. So I got zero mite count afterwards.
I mean, I jokingly say this all the time. Zero is my least favorite mite count. Right. I like seeing one mite because it makes me feel like I did the test right and I didn't mess something up. But how good of a feeling is it not being... And it was nine, right?
It was nine.
Yeah,
it was nine. So nine I did it right away. July, early July.
She had a three... No, I think your test was in... Your original test was in June, I think.
I treated like 4 days later. I'm the type of person that's like, shit, there's nine mites. We got to do it right now.
But nine mites, you know, not a crazy, crazy number.
But in July, that's a lot.
That's what I was going to say. It's a 3% mite load, and it's only raising from July on. Also, it's only getting bigger.
These are my baby hives that I'm doing on my own. I'm like, I cannot lose these hives.
Yes.
Like, I need these hives to survive the winter.
And they're doing...
They're doing
awesome.
Great. Yeah, they're doing great.
And it was so exciting. Honey. Wait, tell them about the chef at CSC.
Oh, so College Settlement Camp is...
We talk about it every episode. Yeah,
It's a camp in Horsham, Pennsylvania, that like the majority of their population, like 80-some percent, maybe, I don't know the exact...
I think it's 80.
Are...
below the poverty line.
Yeah, below the poverty line. And like a big, big part of their mission because is just like bringing the outdoors to everybody. So the chef, I was pulling honey the other day and like the chef of the camp came and she said that the kids, she made like a honey vinaigrette for the salad for the kids.
Which
and
I was like, ooh, that sounds great.
Yeah, and I was like, yes. And she was like, and then the kids started eating it and they're like, this is gross, this is bitter. And then they just took the honey and they're just pouring it all over the salad and they're like, this is so much better. And she was like, that's not cooking.
But we're like, hell yeah, the honey's being eaten. It's so
cool. And it's like they're learning how to use it in different ways. Because so many people buy honey, they're like, well, I don't even know what to, like, other than in tea, what do I do? I'm like, lots
like
of things.
Maybe the most common thing I get asked about honey is like, what do you use it for besides tea? All the time.
So I think this is really interesting, and it comes back to the bee inspector, is why to register your hives. Because at first I was like, I don't know. I don't want like people like at my house.
I don't want the
like,
man involved.
Yeah. But if you think about this, so you're registering your hives so that they come out, so that they can monitor kind of what's happening. And if something happens, they can contact you. You can be a part of it, right?
Yeah. They don't need to just come out. Unless you're trying to sell bees, they don't need to do this full inspection. You have to register your bees no matter what. They only come out and do that full inspection as if you're selling your bees.
But like...
But if something happens, they will come
and
inspect.
Know. Otherwise, you'll never... Whatever. I mean, you'll find out, but... So the Tropolalaps is a mite that's where?
Thailand. Okay. Dr. Sam Ramsey is testing stuff out in Thailand about it.
If you don't know Dr. Sam Ramsey, you should look him up because he's so great.
He's great. And he has great karaoke singing videos
and
on
dancing.
YouTube.
He's very good.
What's up, Sam? Sorry.
But he's not listening.
He's
to
listening.
This.
He texts me after every episode.
Tells us like, how good of a job we're
so
doing.
Good.
But Australia, just the Varroa mite just came to Australia.
So sad.
And they are doing all kinds of things. And I just keep thinking about like bee inspectors, like anybody that has a hive that's registered, they can
help.
And like, so, I mean, the Tropolalaps is a mite. I mean, we have a globalized thing. I just think it's good for disease and health and like community health of the whole thing. It's just...
I was talking to a beekeeper. I was like, oh man, you following this Australia stuff? And they go, hope you had fun while it lasted, Australia. But like, this was bound to happen. I'm like, oh man, I feel the same way. It's so dejecting. But it's like every year when I would read the Australia honey report and I would see still no mites found in Australia, I'd be like, I can't believe it. I can't believe I've been waiting. You just wait to hear that it's over. Same with like that one island in Hawaii. Like you just wait to go like, ah, man, that was awesome while you were able to keep it away. But I don't think it's going to, I don't think they're
coming
toast.
Back from this. Randy Oliver, I signed up for his newsletter and he sent something out about Australia and it was really interesting. If you want to go to, I wonder if he has it just like on his website, just about scientificbeekeeping.com, like the Australia thing you should read about. It's because they're like baiting.
Just for anybody that doesn't know, they found Varroa mite in Australia. They found it for the first time a month and a half ago and they like have done like a quarantine zone and didn't allow for bees to be moved around the country at all. And then the almond pollination happened or was about to happen. And the government gave in to the lobbyists from the almond pollination and they said, okay, bees can be moved into almond pollination from all over the place.
Oh no.
Which basically is like,
it's over.
We're not going to take a year off of almonds, but the mites, there's no way.
There's no way. And they were like baiting wild.
Maybe I'm wrong, but it just seems to me that they just went like, we're losing this anyway. Don't let us not get our money.
Well, if you read, even Randy Oliver's like, hopeful, but you guys are screwed. It's not like, even if you get rid of everything, but they're killing like so many native pollinators in this baiting situation. Mm-hmm. And like so many people have had to destroy so many of their hives.
Oh, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's really awful, but.
Yeah, so we...
Can we end on a positive note?
Well, we've been pulling honey.
Yeah.
So we were able to pull a good amount of honey in like the first week of June, which was like really our spring, really this bright, beautiful spring honey. We just had another decent pull first week of July. Man, like, whoo, baby. It's nuts. We're now witnessing the dearth. So, like, it's very obvious right now that plants are holding onto their nectar. We're just seeing wasp reports. People are getting attacked by wasps. You're seeing these wasp nests build up. That's always, when the dearth hits, the wasps start popping. It's interesting, but, I think one of the more common things people are asking me always is, like, how do you pull honey? How do you extract? Like, what's that all about? So I was just going to give, like, a little quick how we started when we did it, when we had two hives. And then where we've gotten to, first things first, we pull frames from supers only, never in the brood chamber. So I say it all the time. We use mediums. So the bottom three mediums, that is the brood chamber. From above that, any medium we put, medium hive box that we put on top is a super.
So with deeps, is it only one deep is the brood chamber?
Well, that would be a single brood chamber deep. So it's two.
I don't know about deeps.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. Two deeps equals three mediums.
Got it.
There is a single deep method.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Typical setup is two deeps. That's the brood chamber. And then everything above is medium super. So we don't pull anything below. We let the bees all have that. And it has to be capped. It has to be fully capped. The bees know when they hit that 18%, 17% moisture content. When they do, they cap it over. If there's a hive that hasn't had young bees for a little bit and they're just bringing in a ton of nectar and they're filling more frames and they're not capping, there is a chance that they just don't have those perfect like 13-year-old day bees consistently that are creating the wax that they need to cap. But you need a refractometer, right? Like a lot of people go, I'm doing the shake test, and you take the frame and you shake it pretty rigorously, and if no nectar flies out, you go like, all right, it's good. Unfortunately, I've tried a lot of honey that is clearly started fermenting that people have. Whether it's picked up moisture or whether it was extracted.
Yeah, you also need good lids on your buckets.
True that. But a refractometer is like a little device. They're like $50-$100, but you can put any liquid on this little slide and you look through and however magic it works, it tells you the percentage moisture content. So you want it to be below 18%. You don't really have to worry about that at all, actually, if you're just pulling capped frames. So pull capped frames, right?
Yeah.
There are people that extract honey at a 20% moisture, 22% moisture, 24% moisture, and then they put that honey in a they put a dehumidifier in their honey room and they let the dehumidifier lower the moisture content.
You have a talk about this on one of our other episodes.
I think it is bullshit. I think the metal, and there is, yeah, check out a previous podcast. We talk about this, but
we don't know the name of the episode.
No, I never. You have to listen to all of them all to find them. It. Let Get us know what it is.
Find it on your own.
The chemical process that turns nectar into honey is more than just the dehydration of the moisture.
Yeah.
It involves the bacteria and living organisms that the bees have inside them. They're constantly playing with the nectar and introducing new bacteria to it. And there's a fermentation essentially that's occurring that is dehydrating. And there's
like a hydrogen chemical,
exactly,
process,
hydrogen peroxide.
Yeah.
There's a chemical reaction that's happening that I don't think occurs in the same way when you just dehydrate nectar. And that's why I think our honey is better than a lot of honey.
but you want your honey better too.
Yeah, and do it the right way. Shout out our boy Todd Hardy that is like the father of raw honey getting brought back into this country. And he gets it. Make honey natural and proper. He's the
king.
Best. So anyway, so we've been pulling honey. So when we just had two hives, though, I made just from like internet DIY plans with PVC. I made this little one frame extractor. I think it was one frame or maybe no. Yeah, two fit on that thing. I think it was one, but it goes into it.
No, I think it has to be two for centrifugal force. Otherwise,
I think it was in the center of it. So.
Okay, I don't know.
Anyway, DIY, like, I think it was...
Drill.
Drill bit. It hooked into my cordless drill.
The drill went in the center, though, so I think it was two frames. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, either way. You'll see it. But it's using 5-gallon buckets. So you use 2 5-gallon buckets. You have one with a false bottom, and you spin with a PVC setup that hooks into a drill bit. That's what we used when we just, you know, because it was like, all right, we're going to pull... What, 20 frames?
Yeah, it wasn't the best, but it worked. It like kind of like
got the
broke
job
a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, and I improvised a lot of it because I didn't want to go buy a bunch of stuff, so I used what I had.
And then we bought used. We bought our extractor used, which is always
Craigslist, Facebook Marketplace, I think that was. We just have a 2-frame manual crank extractor. But we have a hot knife. We decap with the hot knife.
In a decapping bin, which is amazing, which is like a screen, so it catches all the wax,
yeah,
and then the honey.
The false bottom.
How much honey do you get from what? Like the cappings is nuts.
So, all right, another thing that I tell people with your supers, as long as you have built out frames, if you have a 10-frame box, 9 frames go in that box. You space out 9 frames in a 10-frame box.
If you're not doing this, you should be. It makes your life so much better.
It makes them build. It makes the bees build out the cappings past the. You know, the typical like frame outline on a frame,
like the wood frame,
the frame dimensions. It makes them build it out that little bit more, so then when you need to cut the cappings off, swoop, one fell swoop,
yeah,
it's cutting it right
nice.
off, and then you're collecting all that honey anyway. It's going into this decapping bucket or tub, bin, whatever it's called, and you get it. Oh my god, it's so much easier.
Yeah, that's a good.
I see people use like the Afro Pick style decapping. Mm-hmm. This is interesting. I've never like looked it up on YouTube or anything, but I see people scratching down with the Afro Pick.
Which I think that's what they tell you to do.
It doesn't make any sense to me. You scoop out, like actually treat it like it was an Afro Pick. You go under and pull out. So you go like into the capping, slide it underneath all the cappings and lift up. And it like perfectly rips the cappings off and leaves the cells pretty intact. I just thought that's how you're supposed to do it. And I feel like I never see anybody do it that way.
I don't know.
We use that if like it's a weird spot that the knife isn't going to cut off. You just kind of, flip, 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 you Afro pick it out. It's great.
I think collecting the frames, we shake them, we brush them, and then we put them in a bin with a lid or we cover it with a sheet.
We don't use a fume board. I've never done it, and I don't like the thought of like this chemical that's being sprayed in your hive that like causes the bees to mass exodus away from it. Something about it just I'm not into.
It's also like the other day I did it all gloveless. I collected honey and I never got stung once, and
yeah.
It's really not that big of a deal.
But what I do, I take that frame out. You look at it, capped honey. There's bees on it. When it's capped honey anyway. The bees don't have anything to really like cling to, and I just give them a little shake either in front of their hive or back into the hive. And then I walk away, and the handful of bees that are still on there, I have a little brush, and I just flick, 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 flick them off, put them into another box or a bin or something, cover it up. The more you're in the dearth, when we do this in the spring, I can basically fill a honey, I can fill a super up like 15 feet from the hives, and bees don't even go to it because there's such a bounty of natural nectar out there. In the when the dearth starts hitting, the second you set that down, other bees are on it.
So I think also an important thing that makes it so much easier is take the super off the hive and then pull the frame and shake the frame back into the hive.
Into the brood chamber,
and
essentially.
Every single time you're like reducing the amount of bees, and then bees are also flying away. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's like a really good way to do it.
I see these like uncapping tools that plug in that like are really interesting looking, that just like scrape down the frames. They look awesome. Have you seen that like handheld, like,
no,
they
like
look
a
cool.
Razor.
Yeah. It's like, I don't even know how to explain it, but anybody that had, I honestly hit us up. I love to know if technology actually works, because I get weird ads from China made beekeeping tools all the time that look great. I'm like, is this really work? So if you have that, the newest decapping tool that's getting popular, let us know if you're into it and what kind, where you got it, because like I'm down for that too. I mentioned it briefly. Hey, now's a great time, test for mites, see what your mite loads are, because again, we're hitting the dearth, at least in Pennsylvania, we're hitting this dearth, which means the population of the bees is plateauing and it's about to probably dip down. They're only going to make as many bees as the resources around them are telling them they can. So the resources are lessening. The bees are going to stop making as many babies, but the mites do not stop making babies. So you see that crossing of the mites just start to take off at a rate quicker than the bees are growing.
Don't be lulled into false security that you have zero mites in your tests.
Yeah, like June, zero mites. This is amazing.
July,
but
nothing.
June, July, August. Oh man.
Yeah. Even if in August, September, October, like you got to keep going.
The way we test for mites, we use Dawn dish soap wash. Randy Oliver, scientificbeekeeping.com. He's got all his research on there. He's got all his method. Sometimes it's not the most user-friendly thing. It's written by a scientist, but you can look up Dawn dish soap. That's the method we use, and that's the method right now we're sticking with. It works. It's great. It's cheap.
Yeah, Jeff, the inspector, was saying he doesn't like that because it foams up too much, so he likes alcohol. So it all is your preference, you know? Try to figure it out. But if your bees aren't inspected, I couldn't more highly recommend, I mean, not inspected. If your bees aren't registered, I couldn't more highly recommend registering your bees. There's nothing to fear, only something to gain.
And I'm going to
end. And it's cheap.
I'm going to end this on a positive note. We talked about a bad seller of bees that I said should never have sold a beginner that's never kept bees a nuke in July. Shouldn't have happened. I wanted to mention, there was another seller of bees that I met recently, and he goes, I'm right now, this is in the beginning of July, he goes, I'm right now convincing people not to be beekeepers more than I'm selling bees. And he goes, you know, if they won't give up on it and they don't take my like couple times telling them it's too late, he's like, I'll sell it to them because they're going to buy it from somebody else. But he goes, I'm spending more time convincing people, wait till April of next year. So for every bad, I think there's like five good out there.
Aw, that's sweet.
Do I really think that?
No, I don't think you think that at all.
But what I think and what I know is that if you got this far in this episode and you're still listening,
you're a rock star. We might get swept away right now.
Yo, there's
wind,
some wicked
wind. I don't know if you heard the bang
up.
Just a second. It was the door flew open and smacked against the wall.
All right, so we're going to batten down the hatches. And
yeah, thanks for listening. Enjoyed hanging out with you guys today.
Check out carajoskincare.com. Order some stuff.
Yeah, you can try our honey.
And be on the lookout for some new products with
oh
honey
yeah.
in them, baby.
Oh, yeah.